All right, Jeremy, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Perfect. You probably need to be a little bit closer to your mic, but I believe we are ready for you to share your screen and get started.
All right, perfect. Let me just get that set up. All right. There we go. Hello, everyone. My name is Jeremy Losak. I'm an assistant professor at the David B. Polk College of Sport and Human Dynamics at Syracuse University in our undergraduate sport analytics program. I'm here today streaming live from Syracuse, New York in our tech lab, presenting on behalf of myself and my two co-authors, Justin Ehrlich and Gareth Jobling. The paper we're presenting today, the topic we're presenting today is about hanging pitches. So here I was about a year ago, I'm watching a Mets broadcast because I'm a Mets fan. I'm watching a Mets broadcast that Noah Syndergaard just gives up a home run. And the broadcasters are talking about how he's been giving up a lot of easy contact, how he's been giving up a lot of hard hit balls, and they're talking about how he's given up a lot of hangers. So me being who I am, I go online and I look for leaderboards. I want to see who's leading the league in hangers and things like that. And I look and I look and I look, and I don't find any sort of leaderboard, which kind of prompted this entire project. When we think of a hanging pitch, it's very much in the baseball vernacular, but it's also very subjective to the eye test. We see it, we kind of know it when we see it, we kind of think we know it when we see it, but nobody's actually defined it, nobody actually has applied analytical tools to analyzing elements of the pitch. And it seems like an important idea that we want to address. We would like to know, are certain pitchers more inclined to give up hangers? Are there certain steps that could be taken to avoid giving up hangers? These are, in theory, the worst possible pitches you could throw as a pitcher. And then how do we evaluate single season performance for pitchers who might give up an uncharacteristically high number of hangers? So these are the sort of things I wanted to look at. But before I could do that, we got to define the thing. We have to put together a definition as to what exactly is a hanging pitch. So in putting together this measure, we wanted it to best represent kind of how it's used in the everyday vernacular. So when we think of a hanging pitch, we think of it as applying to breaking pitches. So your hanging sliders, your hanging curveballs is what we look at. So we don't look at, let's say, hanging, we don't look at changeups or fastballs. We focus specifically on breaking pitches. And then we wanted to incorporate common elements of what we think of when we think of a hanging pitch. We think of a pitch that might be located closer to the middle of the strike zone. We think of pitches that might have a minimal movement or certain types of movement that make it more likely to be hit hard. You think of the pitch kind of grooving into the strike zone. We wanted to incorporate those type of elements. Let me show you a couple videos.
Down the two-strike pitch. Swing and drive! Deep right field!
That's a Michael Brantley grand slam on a hanging 0-2 curveball. Notice how the broadcaster said hanging.
Colonel Herder was all over that mistake slider that Robbie Ray tossed up there, left it about thigh high. Wouldn't he ever hit it hard? Right now.
Mistake slider, thigh high, hit it hard. Listen to the type of terms being used to describe these sort of pitches.
Got him looking and he knew it. Right there.
Got him looking and he knew it right there. Okay? So the idea is we wanted to create a definition that best encompassed these sort of elements. Before I get too much into the weeds, I want to thank the people whose work we've used that we've incorporated into this presentation. There hasn't been much in terms of looking at hanging pitches. Jeff Sullivan, Scott Pratt have some articles that kind of touch the surface on this idea of a hanging pitch. But overall, this has been fairly minimal in terms of research. I'd like to thank all the people that have done a significant amount of work on the physics of baseball, especially Alan Nathan. Your spreadsheet that breaks down all the calculations to making adjustments to movement and all the other StatCast type variables was incredibly helpful to this research. And then in terms of the data we use, we focus on pitches between 2015 and 2018. So all curveballs and sliders between 2015 and 2018. We leave out 2019, and the reason why we leave it out is because at this point in time where we have to be careful. We want to give extra attention to how we incorporate 2019, given the barrage of home runs. We have a suspicion that 2019 is going to look significantly different than the rest of our data. So before we include it in the model, we want to give more thought as to how to best incorporate it. So in putting together our definition, we follow the two-step approach. Step one is we calculate a stat expected barrel rate. And then step two, we define a threshold such that any pitch that has an expected barrel rate greater than that threshold, we define as a hanging pitch. The reason why we looked at barrels. So when you think about the worst possible outcome for a pitcher throws a bad pitch, the worst thing that could happen is a home run. More generally, the worst thing that could happen is you throw a ball that gets barreled. There are other variables you can use. You can look at WOBA against and OPS against and things like that. We thought that barrels did a good job in terms of encapsulating bad outcomes for a pitcher. Okay? And kind of the idea behind this expected barrel rate, we produce a measure that says if I throw a pitch with certain attributes, so certain location, certain movement, et cetera, how likely is that pitch to be barreled? We modeled this hanging pitch definition in a similar fashion to how the barrel rate itself is fashioned. So a pitch is defined a barrel if it meets a certain threshold for expected batting average and expected slugging percentage. Well, same idea here. We define a pitch as a hanging pitch if it meets a certain threshold for expected barrel rate. So we very much modeled our definition, our new stat, around this same concept. So what I have here on the slide is an overview of the initial model that we used. It looks complicated on the screen with all the Greek letters, but really what it is a simple logistic model where the outcome that we're interested in is whether or not the pitch was barreled. The latent variable is the probability that a pitch is barreled. And we control for things like the batter, the year, the type of pitch, the pitcher and hitter handedness, and we include different interactions of those different things. The variables that we're mostly interested in are D and M, where D for us is distance from center, and M is absolute pitch movement. The beauty of this approach is that, and what we're doing now is we're constantly playing with different variables to plug in place for D and for M, depending on if you like one measure over another and you think one measure fits better for a particular pitch, the model is easily adaptable just substituting pitches or variables. So what we do is we calculate an expected barrel rate. So we take the code, we run the model using all ball pitches in our sample that were put into play. We estimate coefficients, and then we apply those coefficients to produce predicted barrel rates. So we set batter quality equal across all pitches. We set seasons to the most recent season. And the reason we do this is to make sure that our new measure is both batter and season independent. The idea is here, we want a stat that is pitcher specific, not subject to the decisions that the batter makes. And when we do this, we apply our model to all pitches in the sample, not just those put in play. The idea is here, the pitcher has very little control over the batter's decision to swing or not to swing. As I showed you in one of the videos, the Cubs batter took a called strike three, despite the fact that the pitch was right there. So we wanted a stat that best encompassed that concept of we're not going to penalize or benefit a pitcher because the batter chose to swing or not to swing. So what we have here, we have two figures. The figure on the left looks at the expected barrel rate. So we calculate expected barrel rates for each of our pitches. And the figure on the left shows what the expected barrel rate looks like for all of our pitches versus what the expected barrel rate, the density of our expected barrel rate looks like for those in play. And as you'd expect, the expected barrel rate is much higher for balls put in play. That makes sense. Batters are more likely to swing at bad pitches, which means that those that they swing at and put in play are likely going to be, on average, have a higher expected barrel rate. The obvious concern or criticism is that how can we apply a model that only looks at in-play outcomes and apply it to all of our pitches? Well, the plot on the right, it's difficult to read the numbers, so I'll just summarize kind of what's going on there. What's happening is that this plot shows a sample size, or our sample sizes for all of our pitches, for each of the different left, right, left, right batter pitcher outcomes in all the different parts of the strike zone, and what's in the plot are the different sample sizes. And even if you can't read the numbers, what I want to show you here is that we have a fairly substantial representative sample of pitches in each one of our zones, such that even though we don't have too many barreled outcomes outside the strike zone, we have enough pitches that allow us to estimate this idea of whether or not a pitch is likely to be barreled, even if the majority of our non-in-play pitches might fall under those categories. So we're able to do that, use this methodology, despite the differences. So let's skip that. So what we do next is we identify our threshold. So we take the expected barrel probability value at the 1 minus C percentile for the in-play sample. So C is the percentage of our in-play sample that was barreled, which was about 4.2%. The 95.8 percentile of expected barrel probability is 8.827% in the balls in play sample. Well, we want to scale that down to account for the fact that, again, the balls put in play have a higher barrel rate than the balls not put in play. So what we do is we define a scalar value R as the ratio of the expected barrel probability probability at the 1 minus C percentile for the full sample divided by that same thing for the balls in play sample, which is 0.92. We adjust our threshold, and we get a new adjusted threshold of 8.089%. We replicate this exact same process for just curveballs and just sliders, and we get a curveball threshold of 7.652% and a slider threshold of 8.237%. That means, for example, any curveball with an expected barrel rate greater than 7.652%, we are going to call a hanging pitch. So what we do next is we go back to basics. We want to know, is our measure properly capturing the fact that hanging pitches result in worse outcomes, which is, again, what we want to try to accomplish here. So what we have here in each of these bars compares outcomes, hanging pitches in blue versus non-hanging pitches in orange. The first set of bars looks at balls percentage, so the percentage of pitches that result in balls. And as you can see, only 1.4% of our hanging pitches are balls, which makes sense. We expect the majority of our hanging pitches to be inside the strike zone, compared to 38.7% of non-hanging pitches. The next set of bars looks at percentage of balls hit into play. As you can see, hanging pitches are result in balls in play 26.1% of the time versus 15.1% for non-hanging pitches. Next column, swing and strike percentage. The theory is that it's easier to hit a hanging pitch, thus the swing and strike percent should be lower. And that's exactly what we see, 6.4% versus 14.9%. The next columns look at percentage of balls hit into play that result in home runs and percentage of balls hit in play that result in extra base hits. Okay, again, the idea is these should result in worse outcomes. Well, hanging pitches that are put in play are 3 times more likely to be home runs and 2 times more likely to be extra base hits. So again, fitting into what we want to do. The last set of bars looks at slugging percentage of balls hit into play. Hanging pitches have an expected slugging percentage of 762, whereas non-hanging pitches have an expected slugging percentage of 505. So a massive difference between the two, which tells us that we are capturing the sort of thing that we're trying to capture. So let's go back to those pitches I showed you earlier. So here's that hanging curveball again to Michael Brantley that I hit for a grand slam. So this pitch was in the 37th percentile in terms of vertical movement. The dot on the figure on the right shows where the ball ended up in the strike zone. Where the green and red lines intersect towards the top is where the pitch would have been had it not had the pitch had zero movement. As you can see, somewhat below average movement. A pitch that ended up in the middle part of the strike zone with barrel, expected barrel rate of 9.4%. We classify this as a hanging pitch. All right, here's that hanging slider from earlier. Okay, hanging slider from earlier. This pitch had almost no movement, 12th percentile in terms of total movement, ended up in the exact middle of the plate, expected barrel rate of 8.7%, which we classify, again, as a hanging pitch. What about that called strike three curveball? So this pitch had only 33rd percentile in terms of vertical movement. It was on the slightly inner part of the strike zone, so still towards the middle, but slightly more inside. And as I mentioned earlier, the way we have the model set up, it allows for movement to impact the pitch in certain impact movement in certain ways, depending on which part of the strike zone the pitch ends up. So in this case, it makes sense that the expected barrel rate is 10.4%. Given that if you're a lefty batter, it's a lot easier for a lefty batter in theory to turn on a ball and drive it if it's slightly more inside than slightly more away. And that's kind of what we see here. Again, pitch is kind of close to the middle of the strike zone, but it's hit hard. It's hit, or I guess it wasn't hit hard. If had he swallowed, it likely possibly would have been hit hard. Okay. So if I were there in person, what I would do is I would ask someone from the audience to tell me if they think that this pitch looks like a hanger. The idea is this is almost a test for us to see if we've created the definition that fits into kind of what people perceive as a hanging pitch. Since that's not the case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask our live streaming YouTube audience to weigh in here. There might be a few second delay mixed in, but I want you to do is I want you to watch the video and I want you to tell me whether or not you think this is a hanging pitch. So let's start with this pitch from Andrew Heaney to Clayton Richard. All right, taken for a called strike three. Let's look at it again. All right, called strike three. One more time. All right, called strike three. All right, YouTube audience, I want you to tell me whether or not you think this is a hanging pitch, okay? Why don't you tell me if you think this is a hanging pitch? Again, there's a slight delay on the YouTube feed, so I'll give them a quick second to look at it. And let's take a look. All right, YouTube audience thinks that this is a hanging pitch, and it absolutely is, all right? This pitch is in the 21st percentile in terms of vertical movement, 9th percentile in terms of total movement. This pitch works its way back into the middle of the zone. Again, this is this lefty-lefty effect where the pitch is kind of closer inside to the batter, easier to turn on, had the batter swung. This has an expected barrel rate of 12.9%. We could classify this as a hanging pitch. All right, next pitch. Mike Dunn, Jerod Dyson. All right, that was quick. Let's do this again. All right. The video is really quick here. I'll do it one more time. All right, YouTube audience, tell me what you think. Again, slight delay on the video, but I want you to tell me, is this a hanger? Is this not a hanger? All right, give the YouTube audience a second. All right, we're getting, let's see. Yeah, again, there's a slight delay. All right, as they get their answers, my guess is I'll start seeing the comments as soon as I start talking about it. So this pitch is not a hanger. This is not a hanger. This pitch is up and in on the batter. Decent movement, 47th percentile. All right, it looks like the YouTube audience is saying yes, so maybe this pitch is slightly closer. But up and in, batter makes, he kind of jams him a little bit. He gets a bloop single. Again, this is outcome independent. Solid movement, good location. Only expected barrel rate of 3.5%. Okay, so not a hanging pitch according to our model. Pitch three, is this a hanging curveball? This is Dylan Peters to Chase Anderson. All right, let's start again. All right, one more time. Okay, what do we have here? This is a hanging pitch. In fact, it's one of the highest expected barrel rates in the sample. So this might seem a little odd. This was in the 93rd percentile in terms of total movement. A good amount of vertical movement, a decent amount of horizontal movement. So the question is, why is this have such a high expected barrel rate in our model? And the answer is, again, our model takes into account the difference between where pitches end up in the zone, up in the zone, down in the zone. You can think of a hanging curveball, one that's lower in the zone versus one towards the top of the zone. When it's lower in the zone and it has a lot of movement, you can imagine that one's probably less likely to be barreled. However, if you have a hanging curve with a lot of movement in the upper part of the zone, you could think of that being a pitch served to you basically on a silver platter. This had a lot of movement, but it was in the upper part of the plate. And had this been a more prominent batter, let's say Pete Alonso, my guess is this pitch ends up in the stratosphere, as opposed to being a relatively hard hit ball up the middle. All right. Last pitch. Is this a hanging slider? Taken for a called strike. Let's look at it again. Taken for a called strike. All right. This one hopefully is more obvious. Is this a hanging slider? And the answer is not even close. Not even close. This pitch was in the 85th percentile in terms of total movement. It had really good movement, was in a really good location. Likely, it possibly could have been called a ball, but the catcher did a good job framing the pitch. The pitcher got the strike. Expected barrel rate, 0.1%. Not a hanging pitch in our sample. All right. So now that we've defined every pitch as either being a hanging pitch or not a hanging pitch, we now can answer some of the questions I had earlier. We can conduct analysis similar to what's been done with BABIP research. So Glenn, how much control does the pitcher have over this outcome? Is it a luck or skill measure? If it is a luck measure, do we expect some sort of regression to the mean? I have one year where I give up a lot of barrel balls or hanging pitches. Well, should I be expected to maybe give up less next year? And does that make it a valuable attribute to potentially get on the open market? Is there some sort of value to be gained by going after these type of attributes? Okay, we look at internal factors and external factors. Internal factors are attributes that the pitcher controls. External factors are factors outside of the pitcher's control. So the first question we ask ourselves, are certain types of pitchers more likely to give up hangers? Okay, what we do is we go back to our initial model. We include player season interaction picked effects. We get our coefficients, and then very kind of roughly, we see if there's any correlation between those effects and various statistical measures. We look at things like velocity, so pitch velocity, batted ball profile, are ground ball pitchers versus fly ball pitchers more likely to give up hanging pitches? Strikeout profile, are pitchers that have better control or command or maybe nastier stuff, are they more likely to give up hanging pitches? What about pitch usage? If I give up more, if I throw a larger percentage of curveballs, am I less likely to give up more curveballs or more hanging curveballs per 100 or per however many pitches? Is there effect of throwing the same pitch more often that makes me maybe more proficient at it and less likely to throw a mistake? Okay. Well, what this shows us is there is no correlation. There's no clear, obvious effect here correlating with any of these measures. We break this down for curveballs, sliders. We even split up starters and relievers, and we see absolutely nothing. No obvious effects here. Even with fit, the question would be, are better pitchers also pitchers that are good at avoiding hanging pitches? And the answer doesn't seem to be an answer. The answer seems to be no. That it doesn't matter if you're a good pitcher or a bad pitcher, this idea of avoiding the mistake doesn't seem to necessarily be correlated with being a good pitcher or a bad pitcher. So the next question we ask is there any sort of year-over-year correlation? So the idea is, if there is year-over-year correlation, if the same pitchers are successful at avoiding hanging pitches or not successful in giving up a lot of hanging pitches, is that something that's correlated year-over-year? The bottom two plots, the one on the left looks at the curveball, the one on the right looks at the slider, and at least on the curveball model, we don't have perfect correlation, but at the same time, at least year-over-year, there does seem to be some solid correlation year-over-year. 2015 versus 2016, we have a 0.45 correlation coefficient. 2016-2017, a 0.28 correlation coefficient, which is obviously less. And then 2017-2018, a 0.41 correlation. We're not saying these are things that are perfectly correlated, but at least for the curveball, there is some evidence that there is some sort of year-to-year correlation. It's not super strong, but there does seem to be something there, and we've just yet to identify the source. In the slider model, the effects are a little bit less strong. We have a 0.12 correlation coefficient, 0.22, 16 and 17, 0.41, 17, 18 stronger, but collected body of work, the evidence is not as strong. All right. In terms of external factors, we're in the early stages of looking at these. So the results I'm presenting here are somewhat preliminary. But basically, we want to look at factors that are outside the pitcher's control. So batter ability, pitcher usage, weather. Do these things have any impact on the likelihood of giving up a hanging pitch? And some of our early findings, we show that pitchers are more likely to throw hangers against better hitters. So the idea would be, again, our measure is batter independent. So what this is saying is when you face a better batter, you're more likely to give up a hanger. Maybe you're trying very hard to be precise. You're trying to hit your spots. And in that effort of trying to be perfect or trying to be more accurate, you accidentally are more likely to throw a mistake. That would be kind of that idea. Our second early conclusion is that pitchers are more likely to throw hangers earlier in the count, earlier in the game, and earlier in the season. And this kind of goes counter to the fatigue effect. Some would think that there's a fatigue element here, that when you're tired, you're more likely to throw a mistake. But what this result suggests is that it's very much more of a rhythm argument. Early in the season, you haven't gotten in your rhythm yet, you're more likely to throw a mistake. Early in a start, it might take you a couple pitches to really get yourself into a rhythm. You're more likely to throw a mistake because you're not in rhythm yet. Even earlier in an at-bat, relatively speaking, right before your first pitch in at-bat, it's likely the case that you're walking around. There's time in between at-bats where you might have lost a little bit of your rhythm, but as you throw more and more pitches in the at-bat, you recover that rhythm. The effects in the at-bat perspective are a lot smaller than the other two, but again, it suggests that there might be some sort of rhythm effect. Finally, we show that hangers are less likely to be thrown in controlled weather environments. So domes, stadiums with retractable roofs, stadiums with ceilings, and anything else that's indoor with controllable atmosphere settings. Okay? Where I want to finish off, I want to show you a leaderboard from 2018 showing the hanging curveballs. So Domingo Germán led the majors in hanging curveballs in 2018 with 24. And then what was nice was this project all started with me watching the broadcast about Noah Syndergaard. Well, he ended up first in terms of hanging curveball percentage. 8.77% of his curveballs resulted in hangers, which was the highest of any pitcher event 2018 that threw at least 100 curveballs. One thing I want to note is at the bottom of the slide, I list a bunch of pitchers that didn't give up any hangers, of pitchers that threw at least 100 curveballs. And what I want to note from this is that there really doesn't seem to be any sort of discernible pattern here. You have young pitchers and old pitchers. You have starters and relievers. You have better pitchers and worse pitchers. Again, it fits into that narrative that it's not necessarily a story of age driving a lot of this. So there might not be necessarily an aging curve effect, although we'll look into that separately. There might not be an experience effect. There might not be just how you're used in terms of being a starter or reliever. It does seem to be a little bit all over the board, and it might take a deeper analysis to really identify this attribute that's causing this year-to-year correlation. So going forward, different things we're going to look at. We're going to look at different input parameters. Again, the way we've made the model is it's very easy to plug and place different variables depending on the pitch, especially for the slider. Throughout the conference, we've seen different presentations that have talked about how even a pitch classified as a slider could mean very different things. One that has more vertical break, one that has more horizontal break and movement, and they could be very different types of pitches. So we want to be cognizant of that going forward. And another thing we want to look at is relative velocity. So if I'm a pitcher and I'm throwing 82 mile per hour curveballs all game, and then later in the game, I throw out a 78 mile per hour curveball, a 76 mile per hour curveball, that's out of character for me. What does that mean? Does it mean that that pitch is likely more of a mistake? Does that lead to more mistakes? What does it mean? And then we want to do more research in identifying internal and external factors. So pitch sequencing and repertoire. If I'm a type of pitcher that throws a bunch of different types of pitches, or if I'm a pitcher that optimizes the sequencing of my pitches, am I more likely to get away with my mistakes? Which we'll look at. I want to do deeper weather analysis and look at more atmospheric variables like precipitation, wind, humidity. And then I want to do a bit more usage and fatigue analysis, but that's kind of next step in terms of our research. So thank you all again for listening. Thank you for the YouTube audience for participating. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to hear them now, or you can shoot me an email or send me a DM on Twitter. Thank you.